Good morning. Today is Tuesday, August the 17th. Joining us this morning, Jana Valakovic from the California UC blah, 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 blah extension. Hi.
Hi. Oh, boy. Here we go. It's going to be fun already.
Yeah. Climb on the saddle. Ready to rock and roll. Why do ships and aircraft in trouble use Mayday as their call for help?
Because maybe that's when the trade winds start to kick up.
No, this is even more basic. It comes from the French term, which means help me.
Ah.
And is pronounced Mayday.
Mayday. Thank you.
See, you knew French.
No, I didn't study. I never took French. It's always a
problem. Did you?
No, I didn't. I took Spanish.
Oh, I did German. How's that for even being less applicable?
Right.
And every forgotten 99%+ of it.
Right.
Not that I had retention at test time anyway. Oh, geez. So you were sharing that you've been out and about a little bit.
Yeah.
Lessons learned out and about?
Well, we just did a big family trip and went to a wedding in the East Coast. Lessons learned. Hey, it's great to get out and see family and friends. And ended up in Washington, D.C. and totally enjoyed ourselves there.
Okay. That's I've never been there. I know people look at me and go, huh? It's like, no.
Yeah.
But, boy, if I was there, I think we'd have to stay for 3 or 4 weeks.
Well, there is.
Got to see all the memorials.
So
got to see all the sites.
To
got to do, whatever you can do.
You know, what I really enjoyed, I've been privileged enough to travel a fair bit in my life, internationally and nationally, and to look at what capital cities look like. They're often an odd city, or they're a city that evolved not to be a capital but became a capital, and so you don't have that sense of presence and design and intention. But Washington, D.C. was really established as the capital of our nation, and so it's got this thoughtful layout where people can gather, where people can play, where people can recreate with each other. So you'll see people playing pickup softball and frisbee and lounging in the, the afternoon, fresh air and these open in the open mall. But then, with all of the space left for the museums, which, are largely Smithsonian museums, there's just so much opportunity for discovery and reflection on who we are and these beautiful gardens. And really present ourselves, I find, in a really interesting and wonderful way.
That would be the suck in for 3 weeks part.
Right. We managed to make it through 7 museums, spending about 2 hours at each of them, which is about the saturation level that you can kind of take.
Now, there's a space.
There's a space museum there. Yes, we did.
That's
not
good for a week all by itself.
Right. We did not go to that one because we've been to the Houston Space Center.
Okay.
In the last 5 years, so thought, okay, let's look at some of these other ones.
Which one was most impressive?
Well, they're all impressive in different ways.
Or lasting impression, then perhaps.
Well, I think for our North Coast audiences, we went to the Museum of the Native Americans. Which is the most recent one to be built, and the Yurok flag is very prominently placed.
Oh, really?
And very visible.
Oh, that's cool.
There's a wonderful amount of space, a large amount of space that's given to the Hoopa and to the George family, so Merv George Sr. And
is this a huge museum? Or
it's a big museum.
Are we getting a inordinate representation from some of the activities from here and the awareness?
We have a very large presence in that museum from the North Coast. And, that was really fun to see and to know that, our stories are being shared.
Kind of connect a little bit.
Yeah.
Was there a lot of historical?
Historical?
There were the Indian Wars and things of that nature. Was that represented, or was this more of a cultural museum?
It's more of a cultural museum, at least the parts that I saw. And it covers the Museum of the North Americans, so you'll see it goes far into Mexico. You'll see bits and pieces from
like the Anastasi and even further south than that.
Yep. So there's quite a bit reflected. The African American Museum is amazing. It's one of the newer museums. It doesn't look anything like the rest of most of them have a sandstone sculpted, big presence. I can show you images.
Columns.
The columns and, you know, all that sort of, we might say granite columns, but they're sandstone. That museum is covered in a metal facade, and it looks like an inverted pyramid. And you start at the top and work your way down. And the
it's like a funnel?
Yeah. And the top floor is all about African-American culture, pop culture, and sports. And
the entertainment.
The entertainment side and music and dance. And, you know, and then it goes sort of deeper through time and ends up, you know, and sort of our most troubled history element at the bottom.
That's at the ground floor?
Yeah, it's at the ground floor. Anyway,
really?
It's been 100 years in the making. They've been working on it for
no
a
budget?
Long, no budget. And in the process, you know, they always had space for it, but just took a long time for it to come together. And that was one of the only museums where you had to get a reservation in advance because they're overwhelmed by the level
just
of interest.
Either that much demand or...
That much demand and that much...
Was it small?
No. I mean, they're all have different elements of confined spaces and not, but...
So it was demand and just demand rather than demand and small capacity.
I mean, they all have big, huge ceilings and open space and I don't know. It was...
You hang a pterodactyl in any of them?
Yeah. The Natural History Museum.
That would have been probably where I would have ended up, or if they had one about the wars.
There's a ton. There is a ton about all of that.
Yeah.
I saw all the ballroom gowns of the first ladies.
Oh, really? All the way back to
Martha
Washington?
Yeah, a long section of them.
Okay.
Fascinating.
I would suggest probably people would be surprised how short they were.
They're all over the map. Some of them are cool.
And then it,
right?
Yeah, very cool. KINS. We'll get to something else when we come back. It's 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music. ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and The Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio. Easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music, and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music. Easy radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with noted traveler, Jana Balakovic. Being back in Washington, D.C. and just having enough time to look and touch and feel, did you get a chance to... cherry trees in Washington in spring are one of those things that are iconic, at least for me, of that area. Did you see a lot of trees? That kind of stuff that were, did some of those connections happen for you? Have you been there before?
No, it was my first time to go to Washington, D.C. All the memorials, Lincoln Memorial, the Korean War Memorial, extend.
The War Memorial's
the whole section that extends down the mall is beautifully vegetated with... a lot of elms, American elm, which you don't see very often anymore. So that was neat to see that there were still some populations that have done pretty well. They got hit by Dutch elm disease, so that's why I'm reflecting on it. But, I mean, you can see that there's this architecture of vegetation that is also very thoughtful and well laid out. I didn't get to go to the botanical gardens, which I...
Oh, really? I thought that would be on your checklist.
Well, it rained the day that we were thinking about that. It poured.
It's not like we don't get rain and
I know, but
here.
none of us were ready for it.
Oh, I see. Okay.
We were in, you know,
shorts and sandals. Yeah,
right. And you can only be wet for so long.
Yeah. They turn you down in the restaurants then.
right. You know, I'll say though. I mean, let's just talk about this. I mean, it's a little bit awkward to travel right now, right? We know that the Delta variant is going wild, and we already had pre-planned trips, and it was a complicated time to pull the plug or not. But everyone was really thoughtful on the airlines. The planes were packed, completely filled, but You know, I think with, and this is, I know, political for some of the audience, but with wearing masks and just holding it together, we came through just fine as a whole family. And, you know, it was just nice to see sort of everybody was on board and appreciating just getting the opportunity to be together and do things and
get out of Dodge.
Get out of Dodge and do it well. So, I mean, we went to a wedding with, you know, a whole bunch of family members, and that was great.
Did you write your names on the front of all the masks so that people knew who you were?
Well, I didn't know a whole lot of the people at the wedding anyway, so so it really wasn't that important.
So you just kind of crashed it then?
Right, pretty much, yeah. Yeah, it's a little hard to crash a wedding at the Lincoln Cottage, which is where they had it, which is a few miles out of town, which sits up above the swamp, as we were referring to earlier, where most of the town of D.C. and the you know, the capital part is built. So you get a little more air current and it's a
reality.
You know, okay, this was fascinating. So the Lincoln Cottage was not built for Lincoln. It was originally for a banker, built in about the 1830s. And I walked in, and what struck me, the moment I walked into this stucco cottage, which was interesting, I didn't realize we were building with stucco in 1830, was that the finish wood was Douglas fir. So the floors were Douglas fir.
Really?
There was a whole wall, a whole room that was like the library room that was trimmed out in Douglas fir. With, and
now the patina must have been
they've done, well, it was quite dark now with time.
Was it Georgia pine?
No, it was Douglas fir.
Where would they have gotten that
in
1830?
They went around the horn with it. Think about that.
Well, here in the 30s, there was nobody out here. I mean, Lewis and Clark was,
It is Douglas fir. I will tell you that much.
You cored it? You took your sample?
Oh, well.
If I can't take a cheap shot, why?
Yeah, thank you.
Why have a rifle, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah. When is the Carson Mansion built? Do you know?
Late 1880s through
mid 1890s. So that's finished with tropical hardwoods. And maybe my date is a little bit wrong about when the Lincoln Cottage was built.
Okay, so it was just a tad later,
then it would have been just fine. But I was thinking about ships passing the night, picking up tropical hardwoods coming this way, and we're sending our wood around the other way.
Yeah, the Cape of Good Hope. And
Yeah.
They were committed, and obviously the fellow had some money.
Right. So, I mean, Lincoln's in until 1860, so maybe it was built in 1850. I don't know.
Yeah.
But it was Douglas fir.
Oh, very, very interesting. And so that was being highlighted.
Yeah. The Lincoln Cottage is really kind of bare bones. There's not a lot of decoration, and it's a pretty simple building.
So it was a true cabin? Or was it a primary?
No, it was a primary originally for apparently this banker is what I heard. I only saw the ground floor, but it's got a, you know, nice connection to the grounds and big porches and, you know, this idea that you could relax and enjoy the scene. And
how far? Well, Monticello is in Virginia, right?
I think so.
So that's probably a little bit too far away to run.
I mean, the
that house to me is intriguing and just,
yeah, I would love to see that.
I mean, just to know that Jefferson was there somewhere.
Right.
Yeah, even though they've done a lot of remodeling and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
The historical, not to get too esoteric, but did you sense an essence in any of the areas of some of the historical figures? I mean, even if it was like Truman or FDR, rather than going back and just going, okay, now something clicked. That makes sense. I mean, some of those things that we get forced to read about in elementary school and high school and junior high, was there any kind of making connections?
I think the long sense of history is present everywhere, and everything unfolds on top of history. And you know, our culture, I mean, we fold on top of, you know, people that have lived here for a very, very, very long time,
right? 7-8 generations,
Right? So, but I'm talking about the Native American community, right? I mean, we fold on top of that culture, but we don't always see those artifacts as strongly as we do when you're in the East Coast in terms of things that are several hundred years old. You don't see it as much here.
It's 8:30.
It's going to happen.
Stand by playback.
And now,
live. Real Red Meat Radio.
I keep
forgetting I'm president.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Good morning, KINS. News and information time is 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Jana Valakovic. Jana, when you're on the East Coast, you know, we have things that are here, obviously, with the drought.
Mm-hmm.
And not the drought so much there. We have some of the tree diseases or the bugs here. Probably different kinds of bugs there. Fires here, not so many fires there. Is it such a different environment that a lot of what we know is normal or regular or routine or predictable, just doesn't really apply there because of some of those differences?
Well, yeah, and I think that's a great point because we often send folks into leadership that come from one part of the nation's geography. And if you don't have perspective on how varied the rest of the country is and how much the conditions change. I mean, I think about Randy Moore right now, who's just been appointed chief of the Forest Service, and he comes from California. And, you know, infusing California ideas into an entire nation can be good and can be challenging. So in the East Coast and where I was, it's been a pretty darn rainy summer, and that's perfectly normal. I saw fungi, mushrooms, fruiting everywhere in Maine, right? Like it was like our fall.
Like they were blueberries.
Like they were blueberries. I did eat blueberries. I ate wild blueberries. That was
yes,
that was great. But, you know, the streams are flowing. It feels tropical. It's semi-tropical in some locations. It's just so different from the world that we live in, and the risk and concern for fire and how intense, you know, the conditions are. You know, people kept asking about how bad the drought is, and I'm like, well, it's bad. That's it is really bad. But, you know, how if you don't have the opportunity to travel, you know, the nation, then you don't get a sense of how different those issues are.
You become insulated.
You do.
And just
you do. And yeah.
Well, and that's been one of our complaints. Local perspective,
mm-hmm.
regional, state.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Is if you don't break out of those paradigms, you really are ignorant.
Sure.
You may be really knowledgeable, but you're still ignorant based on everything else that's out there.
Well, and then people, you know, would ask me, well, what tree is that? I'm like, I don't know. There's like 23 hardwoods that grow here in the native hardwoods. I don't know. I mean, I really haven't studied them. I don't know.
Not my territory, man.
Right? Right? Yeah. The pines grow, the conifers there grow crooked, and the hardwoods grow straight, unlike here.
Really?
Yes.
Well, that's it. I wonder if that had, no, it wouldn't have to do with snow at all.
Just different.
Just genetics.
Different genetics, yeah.
Huh. Do they have a lot of arboretums or comparables to that back there?
I would think so. I didn't get the chance to do that. No, I didn't get the opportunity. My cousins just inherited an 800-acre tree farm in Maine, and so.
You mean like a Christmas tree farm?
No, like what we would call a a ranch, a forested ranch here. So
so trees are the product.
Trees are their product, yeah. Some hay, a few pastures that they, you know, have to hay to keep it open. Because if you don't cut the grass every year.
The encroachment
comes right in, right? Because it's basically, it's a hardwood forest on most of the eastern seaboard.
Oh, that'd be, is in Maine?
This is most of the eastern seaboard. I mean, the funny part about driving around the roads in New England is that you never get a vantage point. You're just, you know, on the turnpikes, right? They're not the freeways and they're not the highways, they're turnpikes. You're just in the trenches the whole time. The forest has grown up, you know,
all around
50 to 80 feet on either side of the highway or the road, and you can't see anything. The only times you get to see are when you cross a river and you go up on a bridge and you get a little vantage point because it's just, you know, kind
of. Or you hit a town.
Or you hit a town.
It's. Considering some of the challenges that we've got, are there any that are comparable back there? I mean, you said that your family is going to have a tree farm. I'm thinking immediately, okay, EIRs, harvest plans,
right.
Some of those things that are so onerous here, are they more accepted back there, more routine?
I think the rules are different. They do a lot of winter logging, for example. They log on snow so they don't create compaction. really different than...
That kind of makes sense, doesn't it?
It does.
Other than that wind chill factor.
I don't have enough sense of how the state rules lay out by each state. There are extension agents just like myself. There are, you know, are folks that assist in...
No busman holiday for you, huh?
But, I mean, the idea of intergenerational transfer challenges, landscape planning, how to integrate your goals and objectives, you know, the idea that there might be consulting foresters that assist in that process. I mean, that's all carries forward.
That would be interesting at a national gathering,
right,
to hear the concerns, either the registered foresters or, you know, the advisors that you would kind of fall into, what their concerns were, what their complaints were, what their challenges were, as contrasted to what your normal day is.
I mean, I think it's pretty different. Of the state, of the national meetings that I've been to, California is its own yes. Yeah.
Well, now with
and so you have to think about this. So not every state has a forest practice rules. Not every state has forestry.
Well, you got to have a forest to have rules, right?
Well, not every state has forestry licensing.
Oh, really?
Mm-mm. Not every state, their tax laws change differently. Some states have continuing education requirements for their licensing, which we do not.
Really? Once you are one?
Mm-hmm. There's no requirement for continuing education in forestry in California.
Now, that's somehow that's surprising.
I know. It is.
I mean, considering how so many others need to have current licensure.
Right. Some people still have the ad valorem tax system, which is crazy. Some states. So, which we got rid of in 1974, but the ad valorem tax system meant you were taxed on your standing timber. So you're taxed on your assets as opposed to a yield tax, which is what we moved to, so that you're only taxed when you harvest. So folks, and we all know this, would cut trees just to pay the taxes.
Pay the taxes, yeah.
Yeah, which is... doesn't really encourage stewardship and doesn't encourage long-term investment and all that stuff.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:42.
Hey folks, flying local is buying local. And with three airlines serving five destinations, Humboldt County has more choices than ever. Fly on American, Avelo, or United Airlines. We have service to Denver, Hollywood Burbank, LAX, Phoenix, and San Francisco airports. Now's the time to book and save on that getaway. Or have friends and family fly to visit the beautiful Redwood Coast. For more information, go to flyhumboldt.org. Fly Humboldt, more flights to more destinations.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:47. We're back talking shop this morning with Jana Valakovic. One of the things that you do at the Extension, I still think is one of the surprises. I mean, we got the various advisors and that kind of stuff, but you guys also run the 4-H program, which
right.
is, I think...
It's our best brand name, really.
Many people may see it as out of character. Mm-hmm. Just because, you know, we think forest, we think garden, we think animal. Yeah. We don't think about the youth component
right.
of it. And that's kind of cool. Kind of the signature event for the year is coming up this weekend, right?
Right. Well, the Humboldt County Fair is coming up, which is not a 4-H event, but many of our 4-H youth participate in the fair, and it's a lovely time to see their work come to fruition, whether they're showing animals or whether they've got a craft. You know, there's just so much to see and be proud of about, you know, what our kids can do.
So with that, it's kind of a backdrop.
Mm-hmm.
There were challenges last year, but the kids put it through the uprights.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Challenges this year, not the same challenges, not to the same extent possibly,
right,
but challenges existing nonetheless. How are they dealing with that?
Well, I mean, I think we all have to acknowledge that the Delta variant of COVID is really hitting us pretty hard. And, you know, none of us want to be associated with causing great, you know, calamity in our communities or trying to figure out how to make a safe environment for youth to show their animals and for the junior livestock auction to go forward so that people can bid on their animals. And so there's been a lot of thought and effort at the last minute because, you know, this Delta piece is kind of coming on us just really in the last couple of weeks, to set up a structure that will work. And I think for the listeners out there, if you're concerned about your own health and participating in the fair, there's a great way to actually still be involved in the livestock auction. And that is, you can call the fair office and you can set up a way for you to be a bidder on the animals, but not present physically. So they will arrange to have someone that will be there who can help you.
Oh, so this is like the fancy car auctions.
Kind of, yes.
You got somebody on the phone representing your interest. And
you can still participate. So, I mean, a great way for grandparents and, you know, anyone who wants to be still present there, but, you know, maybe just can't make it this weekend, right? Maybe that's part of it, right? There's another way to participate.
It sounds like it could be a structural change that would be kind of cool. Huh?
I know. I think it's kind of exciting. Yeah. Yeah. So
the big time hits Ferndale.
Right. Big time hits Ferndale. And then also for youth that maybe had a COVID exposure and now suddenly can't participate, they've made a way for someone to show your animal for you. So
there'll be somebody representing those animals also.
So maybe an alternate family can show your animals for you. And anyway, try to make it work, right? That's just what we got to do. It's all about the 4-H can-do attitude, right?
I hadn't even thought, you know, a lot of times, at least the ones that I've seen, the kids are walking the animal themselves.
Right.
Rather than somebody show the animal, not like a dog show, but like the car thing where you have 10 or 15 staff members and they're the ones and they walk out all the various animals.
My understanding is that it would be another youth that shows the animal. So it's the junior livestock auction, so...
Well, yeah, and then you have kids doing the kids and seniors doing the seniors, yeah.
Yeah.
Huh. What kind of variety of animals are there?
Well, there's a little bit.
If somebody's unfamiliar, you don't have the snake auction. Okay, so, snake meat, parts are edible.
There's pigs, there's goats, there's sheep, and there's cows.
The regulars.
The regulars,
yeah. Why not horses? Not for
the livestock auction.
Butchery.
Right.
But just...
You're asking a question I don't know the answer to.
Really?
No, I don't know the answer to that question.
Oh, okay.
No.
It seemed logical.
It does. It does. I mean, kids will show their rabbits, their chickens, I don't know. I don't know.
Well, maybe it's just too, they don't have enough space for horse trailers.
Maybe that's part of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. So it's on Sunday?
I'm sure there's some listener that knows the answer, and they're going to say, Yana, why don't you know everything? Well, I don't.
Good. I'm glad that you would know it, not me. That's a fool's answer.
You know, I get calls after this show saying, you know, you screwed that answer up.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh. Well, good. You got a fan club then.
I don't know. I don't know. I think it's mostly when people want to set you straight.
Oh, I see. Yeah, okay.
Rarely do you get the, hey, that was great.
So they understand I am a lost cause.
Yeah, and they're still hopeful for me.
So the auction itself, when does it start?
I believe it is Sunday, right? Sunday in the afternoon. I think it's in the 1 to 6-ish time period.
Okay, so if you have the opportunity, you can wander out after church.
Right.
See what's going on. And that's really the signature event, other than the horse race.
Right.
On Sunday. They're running on Sundays this year.
Yep.
So kind of fun to have husbandry, even without the horse. Like, maybe that's where the horses go, to the track.
There you go. The horses
instead of the
track.
Auction.
There you go.
And if you really feel compelled, you can buy a horse. All right. Well, sound like you guys had a blast.
We did.
That's kind of what a getaway is all about.
Yep.
Nice to have you back.
Thank you very much.
See everybody tomorrow.